Chapter 24. How to Start a War. Brennus closed the door to the library behind him as he exited, thankful that no other guards had been posted in the meantime. Roshan had allowed him to sleep in the unguarded library for the rest of the night. Brennus's head hurt where the warlock had slugged him, but apparently Roshan knew what he was doing, and there had been no blood, and any bruise would likely be covered by the fall of his hair. The latter was just a guess, as the library had no mirror, and Brennus had yet to find anywhere to freshen up. His face was scratchy with stubble, and his clothes had been slept in. He expected that he looked much less the Grand Marshal than perhaps he should. "That demon can explain to everyone why I look like I have just stumbled home from the taverns, if anyone asks." Brennus eschewed his quest for a wash basin and mirror, or even a morning meal, and headed for the offices of the various Inner Circle members, whose entrances were the floor below the sanctum. The Tower of Contemplation was ornately appointed and well lit with ethereal lights, but sorely lacked for windows. Brennus was unsure how late the hour had grown, but the activity level in the tower suggested that it was at least a respectable hour of the morning. There was a general bustle of sorcerers and servants about the main central stairways that Brennus took to be business as usual. He had little basis for comparison, however, since he had only been there previously under extenuating circumstances. As he reached the door to the High Sorcerer's office, now occupied by a warlock, he overheard voices within. It struck Brennus as odd that the Inner Circle would be so careless, or arrogant, as to leave their doors unwarded against eavesdroppers. Maybe they are so paranoid that the wards produce false conversations to be overheard? Brennus mused. That seemed more in keeping with the sorcerers he knew. Trying to avoid the impression that he was loitering in the hopes of overhearing them, he knocked smartly on the door. The conversation abruptly halted, and a breath later, the door opened. Brennus stepped quickly aside as a middle-aged sorcerer brushed past him. "Congratulations, Marshal," Shader Archon greeted him in passing. Brennus was familiar enough with Shader, a tall, broad-shouldered gentleman nearly his own size. Shader's hair was gray at the temples, but it was his only concession to aging. He was Second Circle and likely one of the sorcerers who had been overlooked for the vacancies Roshan had created among the Inner Circle, though Brennus had never kept such close accounting of the Circle's hierarchy. Shader was also Juliana Archon's father. "Thank you, Sorcerer Shader," Brennus replied, caught somewhat off guard. He was not quick enough of wit so soon after waking to formulate a follow-up question. Pleasantries dispensed with, the older sorcerer took his leave, and Brennus could only watch after him as the question's ministry within his mind slowly began catching up on its workload. Brennus, still overlooking his shoulder, entered Roshan's office. He turned his attention back to the warlock as Shader passed out of sight down the stairs. He was seated in an overly large armchair, clearly better suited to the late Gravis Archon's stature than his own. The office was bereft of most of its contents, the personal effects of the previous High Sorcerer having already been reclaimed by his kin. Heaven's Cry rested in its sheath on an otherwise empty bookshelf, and a few notes and books were scattered about the desk, clearly what Roshan had been working on in his brief time back at the head of the Imperial Circle. "Good morning, Brennus. Close the door behind you if you would," Roshan said. Once Brennus had complied, he continued, "All is well in your dreams?"
"After a fashion, yes."
"The spell I showed you proved adequate?" Roshan asked. "It was not entirely how I expected it to go, but generally yes," Brennus answered, still puzzled by the warlock's interest, and the fact that he had taken Brennus's bizarre quest the previous night so seriously. There was a long pause, and Brennus felt the need to elaborate to fill in the uncomfortable silence. "Is there a way to have it bring your clothes along?" Roshan smiled. "Practice, mostly." That seemed to be enough to satisfy the demon that he had actually put his advice into practice. Brannis wondered if Rashaan was trying to verify whether he really had been able to perform the magic in his dream.
Come, let us get to work this morning, Rashaan said. There are goblins at work on our western border, and we need to determine their plan.
I received a message via the speaking stone in Iran port that Illard's Glen was sacked 3 days ago. Refugees have escaped to Rainsdark and Corgan, with messengers reaching Naran port late last night, Rashaan said. He pushed aside the documents and books that covered the desk and drew a map from one of the desk drawers. It showed the Kadran Empire as it stood presently. By Brannis's estimation, the map could be no more than 20 summers old, given that it showed an independent Magrin and what was once Tuerman still a part of the Empire. In Rashaan's wars, Magrin had fallen before Tuerman.
How many survivors? What of Lord Feldrake?
Brannis was going to have to get used to Rashaan's blunt style of delivering even shocking news. Most of the generals that Brannis knew were prone to much preamble prior to getting to the heart of a matter.
Wrong question. Think to win first, then worry about cost, Rashaan said.
How large a force? Was there any indication whether they were settling in to occupy or just using the city as a way to resupply and cross the Neverthaw? Brannis tried again.
Much better. The survivors estimated that there were at least 60,000 troops, Rashaan said, and Brannis's blood chilled.
That was no tactical force to strike and flee with. That was a full-scale invasion.
They also had at least a few sorcerers among them, which is not unusual for a goblin army, especially one that size.
There were reports of some new siege engine, similar to a catapult, which the goblins have invented. It tore huge holes in the town wall, allowing Illard's Glen to be overrun by goblin infantry. There was an unconfirmed report that there was a human traveling among the goblins as well.
Rashaan stared at Brannis for a moment, then asked, "What do you make of it?"
Illard's Glen is too small a town for goblins to have sent such a large force. Goblins prefer to attack with a clear advantage, but they could have sacked Illard's Glen with a third that force.
I agree, Rashaan nodded.
If the report is true that there was a human consorting with the goblins, I would wager heavily that he is Magrin.
Magrin raiders had taken control of the high pass with none of us the wiser.
So it stands to reason that this activity by the goblins is in support of that effort. I think it is safe to assume that there is some degree of coordination between the goblins and the Magrin to take at least some portion of the western part of the empire. I would assume if that is the case, then the human is a liaison.
That seems reasonable. As to your other question, the survivors could make no clear determination of the goblins' intent. They had made no concerted attempts to hunt down the refugees and were flooding the city with troops, but they could just be consolidating their forces and resupplying. They had not burned the town, so I think it's safe to conclude that they were staying long enough to want roofs over their heads at night.
Illard's Glen is no great prize, no offense meant to those farmers and other loyal Kadrans who live there. So we must assume that they will have further plans. East of Illard's Glen is Rainsdark, Brannis pointed at the map, mostly for reference and to help him think aloud. He had no reason to suspect that Rashaan knew any less about Kadran geography than he did.
South along the Neverthaw is Corgan, Brannis pointed again.
And at the mouth of the Neverthaw is Naran Port. Now, Naran Port would be quite a prize. They would take over all our western shipping and seriously curtail any ability of ours to land reinforcements west of the Cloudwall Mountains.
But that would not explain why they would strike Illard's Glen.
Corgan is more directly in the path from Kelvi Forest, and even Corgan could be bypassed by overland routes if they were willing to march openly without tree cover.
No, Rainsdark is their next target. The mines are still prosperous enough to make it an attractive target.
There has not been gold in the Rainsdark mines for ages, but the deeper mines still yield diamonds, and the whole area is rich in iron ore.
The goblins worship their dragon gods, Rashaan said.
If some dragon remembers Rainsdark as rich in gold from ages long past,
I could consider that they might have designs to take it for their own. So you think this is a mining expedition? No, not really. It seems too straightforward. The goblins use enough strange minerals in their metallurgy that I doubt iron is a priority for them, and they could likely buy the diamonds from us for less than what this campaign is going to cost them. If I had to make a guess, there is something they want those mines for that they either cannot get by trade or that they do not wish us to know about. What if this is a feint? Maybe they intend to take a flotilla down the Neverthaw, taking Corgan along the way to conquering Naran Port, Rishon said. His tone was flat, suggesting that he was not actually advocating the possibility, merely being thorough. It would be a surprising tactic, given the number of troops the reports indicate. They would need a lot of ships, though. I would think that any ships that were able to get under sail or oar would have departed Illard's Glen at the first sighting of a hostile force. That would mean the goblins would have to build their flotilla in Illard's Glen, and that would negate any advantage of surprise they might think to take. Building enough ships would take the best part of a season. Besides, if we prepare Rainsdark for an attack and they make for Corgan instead, we can take a force and pursue them. We would need to be careful, but if we time it correctly, we could arrive in time to pin them between ourselves and the defenders in Corgan. Very well. You can detail your plans on the way there. Be prepared to depart early tomorrow morning. I will have sorcerers to support you, and I shall scavenge about the place for any useful magics that have been squirreled away in the name of the non-existent Emperor. Any questions? Yes. What were you and Shader Archon discussing? Brannis asked. He was beginning to understand how Rishon thought, and figured he would need to be direct to get any useful answer out of him. Wrong question. You have a lot of... No, this time I have the question I want. I may have more later, but this is the one I would like answered first, Brannis said. Rishon looked perturbed, a slight frown creasing his delicate features. After a moment's pause, a smile curled one side of his mouth. I am going to enjoy having you leading my armies, Brannis. I spent much of yesterday bullying sorcerers thrice your age and then some, men who had for long summers ruled unquestioned. None of them dared interrupt me, much less contradict me. A few hold back because they distrust me and wish to wait for the ideal time to strike. But for the most part, it is simple fear that stays their tongues. Always remember, Brannis, it is your mind that I value. Your insight, your inquisitiveness, even your conscience. If I wanted a swinging sword and an empty helmet, I have a whole army filled with those all ready to choose from.
And you still have not answered, Brannis said, folding his arms in front of him.
Very well. I was speaking to Sorcerer Shader about his daughter. I saw the matchmaker's records, so I know she was once promised to you. But I believe it was understood that the marriage was contingent on you turning out to be a sorcerer, Rishon said. Brannis could not help but flush in a combination of embarrassment and shame. It had been winters since he had put the academy behind him, but the sting could still be brought fresh to the surface by thoughts of Juliana. She is too bright a flower to be unwed at her age, Rishon said. I thought that she would be an ideal match for Iridan.
What?
Brannis exclaimed. He had held some vague illusion that perhaps Rishon had been leading up to explain that a Grand Marshal would still be a fine and honorable husband for a sorceress of the Archon line. Well, Iridan would have been considered for a prime match long ago had the Circle known of his lineage. He cannot just linger around and marry some daughter of a lesser nobleman or a simple commoner, Rishon sighed. And he is just the sort, too. I could easily see him falling for some nobody, a sweet little thing from a worthless family. Pleasant enough, but no fit match to be sure.
Who is his mother anyway? Brannis asked.
You are the first to ask that, Rishon replied, chuckling. Is it any wonder that this empire is slipping away as my conquests come undone? Even Iridan has yet to overcome his shock enough to get to that one. His mother is immortal, a demon, if you will, like me. Unlike me, she was born that way. Among the small community of immortals where I met her, they call it being pure-born. I had hoped being half-pure-born would give Iridan a better chance of being born pure-born himself. But alas. I shall want to know more about these other immortals at some point, but there are more pressing concerns at hand, Brannis responded. It seemed that Roshan had an unlimited capacity to overwhelm his thoughts. There were 100 things he needed to know, to arrange, to investigate, and to plan. Agreed, Roshan said. So what did he say? Brannis broke in, deftly setting aside 100 things at once. Min had their weaknesses, and for all his troubles with magic, Brannis's greatest weakness was one particular sorceress, as it had been ever since that one summer. So what did he say? Brannis had asked Juliana Archon on that day, trying to control himself from snatching the parchment from her hand and reading it for himself. He had pulled her aside after her early afternoon lesson in interpreting runes. The messenger had arrived mid-morning, and she had opened it as soon as their alchemy lesson had ended. Brannis had tried to talk to her as soon as he had gotten word, but she had played coy and managed to avoid him thus far. Oh, are you referring to this? Juliana replied, offering the parchment to Brannis and snatching it away when he made a grab for it. I could not begin to imagine. She grinned mischievously, and Brannis melted just a little. He had grown completely incapable of getting mad at Juliana, and was hopelessly enchanted with her. She was still a bully and a troublemaker, but she had left Iridan alone since the day Brannis had humbled her winters ago. And while she was still tall for her age and best described as rail thin, she had acquired the curves of a woman and had taken them as her preferred weapon over her fists. It was a good thing, too, for while at 8 summers old, Brannis was a hand taller and a gallon or two heavier, now he was nearly a head taller and half again her weight. Brannis made another attempt at the parchment, and Juliana turned, holding it at arm's length with her body blocking the path to it. When Brannis grabbed her arm, she shifted it to her other hand, giggling as Brannis pulled her around by the wrong side. She twisted away, but relented when Brannis caught hold of her other arm, relaxing back up against him and holding the parchment angled so that he could read it over her shoulder. Brannis realized he had been tricked when he found himself with his arms wrapped around a willing Juliana, her back pressed against his chest, and the scent of the honeysuckle perfume in her golden red hair filling his nostrils. Brannis had always been the tallest of the boys his age at the academy, and mature for his age, but he had also reached adolescence first. With a deepening voice and a jawline that was, if not bearded, at the very least clearly unshaven, he seemed much older than the other boys. As the girls of his class gained a more adult awareness of the boys, Brannis was the first target of their youthful daydreams. Tall, handsome, and athletic, he was everything most girls could hope for, and Juliana was no exception. So this is it? Brannis asked, after scanning the document. Everything is settled now. Yes, Juliana replied simply. I get to keep you. She grinned and spun free of Brannis's loosened grasp, then leaped up into his arms and crushed him in a fierce embrace, the parchment still clutched in one hand. She squealed in delight, unable to contain her excitement. Brannis was nearly bowled over, but stumbled and managed to keep his footing. A shoulder under his chin was nearly choking him, but he managed to wrap his arms around her and support her weight, easing her to the ground once she had calmed down enough to relax her grip and let him go. Oh, Brannis, it will be wonderful. I can stop worrying now that some other girl will get you for a husband. I cannot wait for us to finish up and graduate. The next 5 winters will be an eternity. Juliana gushed, staring up at Brannis with eyes that were seeing him as perhaps a bit more than he actually was. While she would graduate in 4 summers, Brannis was a year younger, so they would have to wait until both finished their studies.
It is only 4 winters and 219 days, actually, Brannis said, grinning. While he was less outwardly overcome with elation, he was still both relieved and overjoyed that Juliana was going to be his wife one day. Both of them had known from a young age that their marriages would be determined for them by the Imperial Circle's blood readers, who oversaw the couplings of all the scions of the major bloodlines. The blood readers had ensured the purity of Kadrin Empire's sorceress houses for centuries, keeping the most promising blood intermixed. Despite his painfully slow development magically, the High Sorcerer's prophecy kept Brannis' name high among the potential mates for young sorceresses. As granddaughter of the High Sorcerer, Juliana Archon had been deemed a suitable match. Houses Solaran and Archon had been crossed so many times that the rivalries that appeared on the surface never ran too deeply. While both were competitive and proud, the familial links were too numerous to allow for things to grow too contentious, and violence had thus been kept largely in check among the Imperial Circle for generations, as the two strongest houses allied themselves in all but name. Had either of them the patience to research their family histories, Brannis and Juliana could have figured out that they were cousins, some 3 generations removed.
Well, anyway, these are going to be the longest 4 winters and however many days you just said of my life, Juliana replied, punctuated by an overly dramatic sigh. She twirled away from Brannis' embrace, causing the green silk skirts of her dress to billow out in a spiral to keep up with her. While the academy provided room, board, and clothing to all students, many of the wealthier ones still saw to their own wardrobes, especially among the girls. Juliana always preferred to adorn herself in the latest fashions, shunning the plain gray and black of the academy's official wardrobe. Nothing wrong with that, you know. We have all the days we could ever hope for. Who says we should not enjoy them now? Brannis said, smiling cockeyed at Juliana, challenging her feigned martyrdom. Unlike his newly betrothed, Brannis wore nothing but the plain garments the academy provided. He stood out in every other way, for better or worse, and did not wish to further separate himself by flaunting the Solaran's immense wealth. He was the best student in class in every subject that did not actually involve performing magic, and even at that, he was technically flawless, just lacking completely in native talent. He was also the largest boy his age, at least in height, and was always favored in the yard when the boys gathered to sport. More than one slight about his ineptitude with ether had been repaid in bruises or a bloodied nose by accident in the academy's courtyards.
Why, Brannis, are you suggesting you intend to court me? Juliana asked in mock surprise. In truth, she had been trying to get him to court her for quite some time and found his stubborn naivete incongruous with his otherwise quick wit. It did not help matters that half the girls in their class made eyes at him and smiled whenever he looked their way. But unlike the rest of them, Juliana was not only serious, but had reasonable grounds to believe she was entitled to him. Rumors had been circulating for at least 2 summers that she was aware of regarding the two of them being matched. It made sense to her, what with him being the youngest of one of the major bloodlines, her being the granddaughter of the High Sorcerer and Brannis' father being in the inner circle.
If you would rather I did not, we could always just wait until our wedding. No one would...
No, I never said that, Juliana interrupted, just a little too quickly to maintain her facade of aloofness.
Brannis' smile widened just a hair.
Very well then. Yes, I shall court you properly, starting tonight. Meet me at the stables after dinner, Brannis told her. He had been fending Juliana off half-heartedly for what seemed like ages, waiting to find out whether she was going to be the one. He found it awkward talking to other girls, but Juliana was different.
He had wanted to court her since his baser urges had started suggesting that such interests ought to be among his priorities, but he did not know how he would have handled it if he had been promised to another.
Dinara Gardarus seemed as likely a match for the Blood Readers to make, and Brannis did not want to end up caught between her and Juliana if it came down to that. While Brannis had befriended nearly every boy his own age, he was not sure Juliana had any true friends. Instead, she kept company with a small coven of rivals, each constantly vying to outdo the others. They were the high-born girls, all either from the major bloodlines or the wealthier lesser lines. Brannis preferred to keep well clear of them when they were all together, and wanted nothing to do with them fighting over him. Brannis also suspected that long before dinner, Dinara Gardarus would find herself someplace quiet and private to have a long, loud cry. For all that she did to his brain when she was there in front of him, Brannis was still aware of Juliana's faults. She could be downright cruel when she chose to be. That night, Brannis and Juliana had ridden down to the pier at Solaran Estate. Brannis had been surprised how well she rode, since she seemed to spend much of her time at more idle pursuits. She had changed out of the green dress she wore earlier and had donned riding leathers, along with a white silk blouse covered by a black vest, along with a hooded traveling cloak. As ever, her reddish-gold hair was unbound, and it trailed behind her as they rode, occasionally getting in her face as the wind gusted. She seemed not to notice, or at least did not pay it any heed. They took the long way to get there, skirting the pastures and grasslands of Solaran Estate's off-city side, rather than taking the streets. They gave their borrowed horses rein to run and race once they were safely away from the academy and could afford to be less than stealthy. They tied the horses near the pier, and Brannis took them out on one of the small rowboats his family kept for enjoying the peace of the lake, either for fishing or just enjoying the lake for its own sake. It was small and sturdy, ringed around the edge with tiny runes that would keep it from tipping far enough to be dangerous. And while many of Brannis's kin would have propelled it with magic, it was nonetheless kept equipped with a functioning set of oars, which Brannis put to their proper use. As he rowed them out to Dragon's Eye Island, the little forested oasis at the center of Dragon Lake, he bid Juliana look in the satchel he had brought. Inside was a bottle of ice wine he had pilfered from the academy's wine cellar, and a rolled-up woolen blanket that was wrapped around a pair of the fancy goblets that were kept aside for when the academy was expecting important guests. Juliana looked up from inspecting the satchel's contents and smiled her approval. It was so quiet and peaceful out on the lake that they had hardly spoken a word since Brannis began to row. The rhythmic slosh of the oars as they entered and exited the water was the only sound. The late spring air was still warm, even as dusk set in, and the stars came out as they made their way across the lake. The breeze carried only the faintest of chills that made Juliana huddle beneath the cloak she had worn. She might have worn something prettier than the riding gear she had chosen, but Brannis had told her to meet him by the stables. She had gathered that he was going to have them ride somewhere. It might not have been a masterwork of deduction, but it had still made him feel like she shared his thoughts. As for his plans for the evening, he left her guessing at the details. He had read enough storybook romances to know that anticipation and mystery were all but essential. Little had he realized at the time, but Juliana had plans of her own, far more adventurous than his. The maids that kept up Archon Estate were incorrigible gossips. Juliana's lady's maids and the girl who cleaned the floor, where her room was, had a rather keen interest in her education while she was home from the academy one winter. After comforting her through the confusion and worry following her first moon flow, they had taken her into their confidence as if she had just passed an initiation rite. No longer guarding their tongues in the presence of young ears, Juliana had gained a courtesan's education by the time she arrived back at the academy that springtime. Brannis could see Juliana's breath come quick by the time they neared the island. With no oars to busy her hands, she fidgeted in her seat, some thought clearly occupying her brain. That night she told Brannis that he was the kindest, bravest, all-around best boy. No, strike that, he was a man. she had ever met. The inner circle had seen fit to let her have him, but she would be flogged before she would wait nearly 5 winters to claim him.
"What would you expect? Of course he agreed," Roshan answered. "It would only be prudent in the aftermath of his father's death to try to solidify his standing in the circle. What could he possibly hope to gain by antagonizing me, by refusing an offer of marriage to my son? The merits of the arrangement itself aside, he would be a fool not to leap at the opportunity to get in my good graces. But why Juliana Archon, of all the unwed girls in the Empire?" Brennus demanded. He suspected that Roshan might be intentionally goading him. Somewhere in the recesses of his mind, Brennus knew he had slipped just past the line where rational arguments resided, and was now practicing a somewhat suspect alchemy of optimism and paranoia. "Maybe he just wants to see if I was still intending to follow through on our betrothal. Maybe he was actually talking to Shader on my behalf and wanted to dangle Iridan's name in the way to tease me. Maybe. Maybe."
"You overestimate the number of candidates, I think," Roshan replied, picking up a hefty volume from his desk and waving it in front of Brennus. "This book has records of all the eligible sorceresses in Kadrin, as well as many who have since been married off. There were perhaps 3 or 4 who might have been suitable, perhaps as many as 6 if I were willing to wait on girls who were still at the academy. Juliana Archon has the best pedigree of any of them, though. You should be flattered, Brennus. It was why you were matched with her yourself."
"How is that flattering, considering how it has turned out?" Brennus shot back. "If my pedigree is so good, why should I not marry her? It was all approved, and I've never actually seen anything that says otherwise. Everyone just seems to have assumed it was all nullified when I left the academy."
"Would you like me to make a proclamation, Brennus? Shall I gather the inner circle and make sure everyone sees that we have followed protocol?" "By the winds, Brennus! They did it to spare your dignity and your families. I have yet to unravel all the political nonsense the inner circle has engaged in, but I strongly suspect your father would have held up any new betrothal for Juliana Archon due to the embarrassment of having to admit you were deemed unsuitable. Now get a hold of yourself, Brennus. Whatever this girl meant to you, it was 9 winters ago, and you need to put it past you. From everything Iridan has told me, you have no trouble finding women to share your bed, and why not? You have everything in your favor. Heroic young knight, just given command of the Imperial Army. Good family. Have the ear of the warlock. Take your pick of any woman in Kadrin and she would be yours.
What nobleman would refuse you his daughter's hand?
What commoner would not be swept off her feet? Find some foreign princess to wed and secure allies for the Empire. Choose a sorceress from an emergent bloodline if you wish. I assure you her family would be ecstatic to mix with Soloran blood, hoping your talent merely skipped a generation.
But the ones in this book," Roshan shook the genealogist's tome for emphasis, "are not for you. Kadrin has kept itself strong for thousands of summers by maintaining the strength of the Imperial Circle. I cannot allow the best of our young blood to be diluted. Strength begets strength. If I looked back through enough of these books, I could trace my own lineage back past the founding."
"I could do the same," Brennus said. "A few generations back, it is even the same ancestors." "Brennus, there are 1,000 others you can have, and a paltry handful denied to you. Why must you insist on being difficult? Do you wish to know why?"
Roshan set down the book he had been holding and took another like it from the desk. He flipped through it to the last portion that had been filled in, leaving numerous blank pages in the yet unfinished volume, and flipped back a few pages.
"Here, this is your reason."
The entry stood out immediately. "Brennus Soloran. F. Maruk Soloran. M. Lefalia Soloran, Sharnas." The whole of which had been crossed out with a double line, accompanied by a notation in different handwriting. "Unsuitable." Brennus felt a chill in his gut and suddenly felt not quite well.
He had known his status among the circle had changed completely when he left the academy, but somehow he had never fully accepted that he was forever cut out of their plans for the continuation of the bloodlines. The finality of those two thin lines passing through his name was like an iron door slamming shut and blocking off that part of his past. Neither Brannis nor Rashaan spoke for what seemed like hours, as Brannis stared numbly at the birthing records. He saw the names that shared the page with his. He recognized them all. They were his classmates, his friends, the girls he had once flirted with and the boys he had wrestled with in the academy's courtyards. In the eyes of the circle, they were valuable to the Empire, and he no longer was. What he had turned out to be, they had no use for, and wanted no more of. Rashaan finally reached over and closed the book. "Now go prepare for your departure. Expect to leave in the morning. I have many preparations to make, not the least of which is selecting sorcerers to accompany you. Be at the palace at sunset for a late dinner, and I will gather everyone involved to discuss our plans. I would suggest you find a room at the palace for the night as well, so that you might leave as early as possible. The steward will be expecting you and ought to be able to manage something for you as accommodations." "Why send sorcerers? Rainsdark will have a few of their own that can handle reinforcing wards and preparing fortifications. I would expect that in battle any other sorcerers would be as much a hindrance to you as they would be an asset." "Because I do not intend to accompany you. If I meant to lead every battle for the Empire, I would have little need of you, Brannis. Because I have you, I feel I can trust that the battle will be well conducted, without requiring my presence. In the meantime, I have much to do in getting the Empire back under control. I doubt what is said to my face bears much similarity to what they say behind warded doors. I will spend my time unraveling the knotted tangle of lies that obscures Kadrin politics these days. In truth, I think I would much enjoy the slaughter I am sending you off to commit in my place. If there were another who could run the Empire without causing further chaos, I would not hesitate to go. What I have done is bad enough, though, without handing the reins of the Circle and the Regency over to yet another usurper." "Very well, then. I shall be at the Army headquarters much of the day, learning what I can of Rainsdark's defenses before departing," Brannis said. As it turned out, Brannis's offices at the Army headquarters were neither in the stables nor the wine cellar. They had, in fact, given him a spacious suite with its own sitting room and a view overlooking Kallak Square. It was large enough to meet with half the senior officers stationed in Kadrus at once, and with a large oaken table upon which maps could be laid out, surrounded by high-backed chairs. There was a wide, polished oak desk over 100 summers old that allowed its occupant to sit with his back to the panoramic view of not only the square, but much of the city as well. Being on the uppermost floor of the building, it was high enough to see the palace over the surrounding buildings. Brannis had taken advantage of the planning table to gather all the maps he could find regarding Rainsdark, or rather that he could have underlings find and bring to him. Brannis was still growing used to the idea that he could give orders to literally anyone in the Imperial Army. He suspected that it would be some time before anyone quite respected him in his new position. But for the time being, the backing of the warlock was all the authority he needed. No one was yet certain just how Rashaan intended to oversee the affairs of the army, or how much involvement he would have. Giving command over to a young knight of his own blood was, in their view at least, merely the first of many changes to come. The reputation of Rashaan the Conqueror had never been connected with long periods of peace. Rashaan's maps were several winters old, but Brannis worried little that the place had changed. Rainsdark had been built in the Empire's younger days, when gold had been found in the Cloudwall Mountains. Once the mines opened, the wealth it produced for the Empire allowed, and demanded, the construction of impressive fortifications. To the north side of the city there had been a quarry since ages long past, providing massive stone blocks that constituted the city's streets, walls, and fortresses. Smaller stone blocks were also produced,
which were used in the construction of most of the city's buildings. As Rainsdark had once been a key to the Empire's prosperity, the army had extensive diagrams of its defenses. Every tower, the keep, and the entirety of the fortress was mapped out in admirable detail. Brannis was torn as to whether he should have someone make copies for him, but decided that there was just not enough time for someone to do a thorough job of it. He satisfied himself with going over them all himself and committing them to his formidable memory. Unless they had fallen into disarray in Rainsdark, he could reference their own records once he arrived, should he need to check any details. Brannis had been going over the layout of the upper mines, once the lifeblood of the Empire's gold, when a junior officer interrupted him with a knock at the door and entered quietly. "Sir Brannis, you had mentioned a dinner engagement at the palace tonight," the officer said. Brannis looked out the window of his new office and saw that the sun was sinking low in the sky. The light had waned on him so gradually that he had not noticed. "Thank you, Lieutenant. Dismissed," Brannis replied. He left the diagrams and maps scattered about the table for his new underlings to deal with, and made haste for the palace. Brannis arrived late for the dinner that Rashan had arranged. As the steward escorted him into the grand dining hall of the palace, he could see the other guests that Warlock Rashan had invited. Brannis had expected to see Iridan there and was not disappointed. He was impressed with the new uniform that had been fashioned on such short notice. It was nearly a copy of Rashan's own, though Brannis suspected that the materials were far less exotic, and the epaulets attached to his cloak were of shining steel rather than gold. It was clear that Rashan intended to follow through with his stated goal of making Iridan into a warlock as well. Iridan sat just to the right of Rashan, who was seated just to the right of the vacant head of the table. The Emperor's place setting was empty, likely to show that Rashan was merely a regent and had no designs on the crown. The rest of the guests consisted of the remaining members of the inner circle, a small number of sorcerers he had not yet met, Lord Gellard Halimir and his lady wife Chandel, old Duke Benclear, and Shader Archon and his daughter Juliana. Brannis was fortunate that the palace's formal dining hall could seat hundreds for a feast, and that the single long table set out seemed lost in the large room. It therefore took long enough for a porter to escort Brannis to the table that he was able to compose himself after the surprise of seeing Juliana. Had he been of a mind to try predicting the guest list, he might have seen the logic behind most of the guests seated around the table, but he had been rather preoccupied with military planning on his journey from the army's headquarters to the palace. The seat to the left of the vacant setting for the Emperor was empty as well, and that was the seat to which the young porter brought Brannis. He was to be seated just two seats from Juliana, with only her father between them. As Brannis approached the table, conversations halted. "And here he is, our new Grand Marshal. Brannis, I was just explaining to Duke Benclear why you will be taking over command of the army," Rashan called out loudly enough for the whole table to hear as Brannis was being seated.
"I am not in favor of it, young sir," Duke Benclear informed Brannis from halfway down the table.
Duke Benclear would tell anyone who cared to listen that he had seen over 74 autumns, and that anyone who did not wish to hear his opinions could just wait until he died, at which point he promised to hold his tongue. The Benclears owned much of the land surrounding Cadrus, and a fair amount of the city itself. Other than the palace itself, very little of the empire belonged solely to the crown.
"Sir Herald had done just fine, I think," Benclear said. "Comes from as good a family as you will find among the commoners."
"Your Grace," Rashan said, "you will find that Sir Brannis has one of the finest military minds. Sir Herald may be a fine administrator, but I do not think he will do as well by our troops in the field as Brannis would."
"I must admit it seemed a bit rash to me as well," Dolvain said.
Brannis thought that it was a good sign that at least someone in the inner circle was willing to voice a dissenting view, even if it was in argument against his new position.
"Agreed," added Lord Halimir. "He has little experience, a few summers fighting on the northeast borders to keep back the ogre incursions, then a small scouting command that could not be called entirely successful. Lord Halimir was technically Lord of Cadrus. All functions of governing the city, those that the Emperor did not wish to deal with personally, fell within his purview. While his personal holdings in the city were still considerable, House Benclear had a greater share of the city than the Halimirs. Neither, however, held title to as much of the city as the Solarans. Between the Solarans, Archons, Gardaruses, Benclears, and Halimirs, nearly all the land in the city was accounted for, and all others were their tenants.
"I have an eye for such things," Roshan said. "I see more than you do, looking at the same events. I watch him think and plan. I have matched wits with him and lost. I have conquered kingdoms and advised emperors, and I have more blood on my hands than any of you have seen in a lifetime. I am an expert on the subject of war, and I tell you that I prefer Sir Brannis to lead my armies."
Brannis could see the effect his words had all along the table. Except for Iridan, these people had not ridden with Roshan, not talked with him at any length. To them, he was history come to life, an ancient, mad demigod of war. He sounded so sure when he spoke, brooking no argument and citing experience at war that he knew none could call into question. Certainly the wisdom of his conquests could be rightly debated, and had been for 100 winters, but the fact of them was indisputable.
"So then, tell us of this new threat from goblins to the west," Shader said, seeming to be not entirely concerned with the affairs of the army.
"The expedition to Kelvi uncovered the incursion of goblin forces to our western territories," Roshan said. "Word was sent to the circle but went unheeded, and now we have word that Illard's Glen has fallen. We believe that they intend to press onward to Rainsdark with the intent to conquer and hold it. Should they succeed, they will be difficult to dislodge, as Rainsdark is built quite well for defense."
"Would that not mean that the goblins will have difficulty attacking it in the first place?" Lord Halimir asked, and there was a general muttering of agreement with his logic. "Certainly we ought to know how to defend it better than they would."
"That might be the case, but we know that the goblins are no fools," Brannis said. "They know better than to throw their forces at defenses that they cannot penetrate. We have reports that they have created new siege engines, and have tested them on the walls of Illard's Glen, a town they could easily have taken anyway. Instead, they crushed the wall into gravel just to see if they could. Rainsdark will face the same threat soon enough." Brannis hoped he sounded as smart as Roshan made him out to be.
"What makes you certain that they are intent on Rainsdark?" asked Duke Benclear.
The scrawny, bald old nobleman sat back and awaited an answer with folded arms.
"We have examined all the possible motives for the goblin campaign against us and concluded that they are intent on the Rainsdark mines," Roshan answered. "I will not bore you with the details of our deliberations, but suffice it that we find no logical reason for them to take Illard's Glen, and nothing more had they intended to strike us further south. The delay to take Illard's Glen would have been pointless."
"So what then? You mentioned having a plan?" Shader asked. "I am not normally privy to war council. Tell me why we are here tonight."
"Well, firstly, I wish to congratulate you and formally announce the betrothal of my son to your daughter."
There were looks of surprise around the table, but no one spoke out. "Iridan," Roshan motioned for him to stand, and the new member of the inner circle got up from his chair, resplendent in his black warlock's robes. "Juliana." He motioned to the young sorceress, and she complied. She was wearing the plainer black robes befitting her position in the sixth circle, cinched tightly around her slender waist. She looked much the same as Brannis remembered her, though he had avoided seeing her the past few summers. She still had the same long reddish-gold hair, and her figure seemed to have never fully finished filling out. The fire he was used to seeing in her eyes seemed muted, and she looked a bit self-conscious with the attention of the rest of the attendees on her. She looked around a bit as she stood there, and when she turned to look his way,
Brennus quickly averted his gaze to avoid making eye contact with her. In doing so, he happened to notice that Iridan looked a bit nervous with the attention as well. "We are in no rush," Rashan said. "There will be time for festivities come springtime, with better omens for a marriage. We shall toast a renewed alliance between House Solaran and House Archon." And with that, everyone at the table stood and raised their wine goblets. There was a general chorus of agreement with the sentiment, though Brannis thought he could make out some sarcastic comment from Lord Halimir
about how little support House Solaran seemed to need these days.
After the toast, they all resumed their seats, with the soon-to-be couple looking relieved to join the rest of the diners. "And now to the more pressing business," Rashan said. "I feel that we need to dispatch aid to Rainsdark in advance of the expected invasion. I have heard two sentiments tonight that I have agreed with. The first is that Rainsdark ought to be able to hold out, as the city's defenses are indeed formidable. The second is that the goblins are clever little vermin and know better than to attack with no plan to overcome those defenses. Since the city ought to be able to defend itself, and the goblins clearly have thought of some clever way to change that, I am sending Grand Marshal Brannis over there to match wits with them and counter whatever gambit they intend."
"You really think that sending this boy over there is going to change the course of a battle?" asked Duke Benclear. "If so, I think you are daft. I know Duke Peloton, and if some unscarred little knight shows up at his castle gates demanding to take over command of his army, he shall have him in chains. I would do the same if I had a goblin army camped in my back garden, and some fool came around trying to give me orders."
"In that case, I expect you will approve of my decision to send along a few of the circle to lend him aid. There will be no confusion over who is in command. Iridan will be going as well. He has experience in battle, and I have given him some advice that ought to help him as well." Rashan paused as if awaiting objections, then continued when there were none. "I am also sending Ruglor Margarin, second circle, and Faolin Sarman, fourth circle. They have both proven themselves to be competent and have accepted this assignment voluntarily." Two of the sorcerers Brannis had never met nodded in acknowledgement, making it apparent that they were Ruglor and Faolin, though he could not gather which was which. "Lastly, Juliana Archon will be going as well." The last comment provoked a reaction from Shader Archon, who immediately bolted up to his feet. "You cannot just send a girl into war. She is only sixth circle, and you just arranged her to your own son. You may have aspirations of turning Iridan into a warlock, but Juliana is no warrior," Shader said. "What game are you playing at? Are you trying to get her killed?" "Relax yourself, Shader. I have no thought as to how long the siege of Rainsdark may last. I had just thought that it would be good for Iridan and Juliana to spend time together. And Iridan will certainly not be staying behind. When the fighting starts, I would expect her to keep out of the fray, along with sorcerers Ruglor and Faolin, I might add."
"Only Iridan would I expect to actually engage the enemy," Rashan said.
"And besides, I believe that a man fighting to protect his lady love will always fight to the best of his ability." The conversation went on for a while longer, but that was the last of it that really sank into Brannis's mind. The lords and sorcerers may have missed his intent, but Brannis had heard it as clearly as if he had spoken it aloud. It was not Iridan that Rashan was looking to goad into excellence, but Brannis himself. After the dinner was over, one of the palace porters brought Brannis to a room they had made ready for him. The palace was replete with guest rooms, prepared to entertain personages from all over the world, from kings to emperors, lords to merchant princes, and occasionally even Kadran nobility when they came from outside the city. Brannis stopped in the room just long enough to allow the dinner guests to go their various ways. Once he felt it was relatively safe to go about without answering a lot of questions, he headed across the palace to the Tower of Contemplation. The guards on duty that night were not Todd and Joe Duel, but they let Brannis into the library anyway. After all, short of Rashan himself, Brannis seemed to be in charge of everyone, as far as most folk could tell. An hour later, when Brannis left with a pack that was suspiciously much fuller than when he arrived,
The guards said nothing. There were rules about taking books from the library, namely, that no one was to take books from the library. But Brannis was willing to ignore rules until such time as he heard from Rashaan that they applied to him. Anyone else was going to have to take it up with the warlock if they did not agree with what he did. Inside the pack were three volumes: Basic Wards, which seemed to have a good overview of the simpler warding spells; Hellfire's Song, a whimsically entitled book that nonetheless contained details on a number of battle magics that Brannis thought might be good to know; and The Way of the Wind, which discussed at length weather and wind patterns, both from an academic as well as magical view. Brannis had nearly taken Magic at Sea, The Tides of Ether and Water, but had no idea how to justify having it if someone found it. He promised himself to look into it later, upon his return. Kyrus would just have to get by without nautical magic for a while.